CD 5.
38. Finn. I've taken to watching Ellen as she stands by the cooker stirring something in a pan or sits at the table, her head bent over a magazine, and try to imagine what would happen if I were to say the words out loud, the words that would rid me of her, the words that would buy me the freedom to see Layla. Sometimes I go as far as mouthing, "Ellen, I'm sorry, but I can't marry you," trying the words for size, testing the weight of them in my mouth. And then I imagine her reaction. First the shock, then the bewilderment, followed by a dawning realization that I've never truly loved her. And finally, a quiet acceptance that I am no longer hers now that Layla is back. Except it wouldn't be like that. There would be tears which I couldn't stand, and recriminations which I couldn't stomach. So the words remain trapped inside me until I feel as if I'm going to break under the strain of leaving them unsaid. Sometimes, when I'm watching Ellen, I wonder how it has come to this, how I can be contemplating life without her. But then I think of Layla, and Ellen fades into nothing. I remember Harry saying, all those years ago, that Layla had bewitched me. Well, now she's bewitched me all over again. As the days go on, I become desperate. I email Layla, asking her again if we can meet, telling her that we need to talk, that I need to see her. But as I make no mention of having done as she asked, she doesn't reply. "How much longer are we going to give Layla?" Ellen asks one evening. We're in the sitting room, listening to music and supposedly reading, but like me, I'm not sure she's actually turned any pages. I lift my head from my book and look across to where she's curled up on the sofa, acknowledging that I would never normally sit so far away from her. Before Layla, I would have been next to her, her head on my shoulder, my arm around her. "What do you mean?" I ask, playing for time, because I know very well what she means. It's 6 days since Layla's last message, 7 since the Russian doll came through the post. "Before we tell Tony or someone that she's alive," I hear the nervousness in her voice. "We can't keep it a secret. The police need to know." "Not yet," I say, for the third time. "We agreed that we'd wait."
"We said a few days. It's been a week now," she persists. "If she was going to turn up of her own accord, surely she would have by now. She was missing for 12 years. We need to give her more time."
"Then can we at least tell Harry about the Russian doll that came through the post?"
"Why?" I say, perplexed. "What good would that do?"
"I want him to know that I was right when I said that Layla was back. I could tell that he didn't know what to think despite the Russian doll I found."
Something occurs to her.
"Did you tell him about the one you found on the plate in the Jackdaw? The one you showed Ruby?"
she asks.
"No,"
I admit.
Now she looks perplexed.
"But it would have backed up my theory.
As I said, I didn't want to get anyone's hopes up until I was sure."
"But you're sure now,"
she says emphatically, making it impossible for me to stall any longer. "All right, I'll give Tony a ring."
Ellen looks relieved.
"Three heads are better than two. He'll know what to do.
What about Ruby? How much does she know?"
Her question takes me by surprise.
I make a quick calculation. I can't tell her that Ruby knows 10 times more than she does, that she knows as much as I do. So how much is it feasible that Ruby would know?
"She knows why I was upset to find the Russian doll on the plate," I say slowly, trying to work it out as I go along. "She knows I thought it came from Layla. When I accused her, I mentioned the story from your childhood, so she knows that now."
"Does she know that I thought I saw Layla in Cheltenham?"
"No, I don't think I mentioned it to her," I say, keeping it vague. She's quiet for a moment, and I hope it's a sign that she's going to leave it alone for the moment.
"But what if..."
She stops.
"What?"
I prompt.
"You said that you didn't want to get my hopes up until you were sure it wasn't some kind of sick joke," she says slowly. "But what if it is?
What if it's just someone who wants us to think that Layla is back? But as you rightly said, who would do such a thing? And nobody really knows the story of the Russian dolls except us. And Harry.
I frown. You don't seriously think that Harry has anything to do with it?
She bursts out laughing.
No, of course not. Not Harry.
I was thinking more of Ruby.
Ruby?
But, yes, I know. She didn't know the story of the Russian dolls until you told her in the Jackdaw. She leans forward urgently. But what if you had told her before? I mean, you thought you had, which is why you thought she was behind them. So maybe you had, and she just pretended that you hadn't.
My head feels as if it's going to explode with trying to keep up.
But what about you seeing Layla in Cheltenham?
She shrugs.
Maybe you were right all along. Maybe it was only someone who had the same sort of hair as Layla.
She pauses.
Ruby has the same sort of hair, long and curly. But not the same colour,
I say.
Maybe she wore a wig.
Anybody could have worn a wig. Anyway, Ruby didn't know we were going to be in Cheltenham that day.
She could have seen us leave and followed us.
So are you telling me that you don't think Layla is back anymore? That you think Ruby is behind it? I ask, frustrated.
But isn't that what you thought at first? That Ruby put the Russian doll outside the house and then one on the plate so you would think Layla was back and change your mind about marrying me?
Yes, but I don't anymore.
So what changed your mind about Ruby? The only thing that has happened since then is that I received a Russian doll through the post. Is that what convinced you that Layla is back? Because if it is, it could easily have been sent by Ruby.
But I'm not thinking about Ruby. I'm thinking about something else, she said. Something so shocking that a strange weariness comes over me. As if I'm finally having to accept something I've suspected all along, but have hidden from. The air around me suddenly feels heavy. It presses on my chest, making it tight, and I realise I can barely breathe. Ellen jumps to her feet, and the look of alarm on her face as she hurries over to me makes me wonder if I'm having some kind of heart attack. Craving fresh air, I push her out of the way, go through to the hall and wrench open the front door, gulping in the cool night air.
Are you all right?
Ellen's voice comes from the hallway behind me. I'm fine, I manage. I just need some air. It was hot in there. She hovers for a moment. But when I don't say anything more, she understands that I want to be on my own and disappears into the kitchen. I sit down on the step and wait for normality to return. It's a long time coming. I know what did it, why I felt suddenly ill. I push the thought away, but it bounces straight back, forcing me to look at it, examine it, consider it. Is it possible that this whole thing with Layla is a hoax after all? Is it possible that I've been betrayed by the one person I would trust with my life? Harry, the person I love like a brother. It was something Ellen said. No, the way she had laughed when I thought she was pointing the finger at Harry, when in fact she'd been pointing it at Ruby.
No, of course not,
she'd said. Not Harry. Because it was unthinkable that Harry would do such a thing. But I know better than anyone that love makes us behave out of character, that it drives us to do things we never thought we'd do. Hadn't Harry told me only the other day that he wished he had married, settled down? I hate where my mind is going, but I can't stop myself. Maybe he's in love with Ellen, has been from the very start. Was that why he used to invite her to stay at the flat during her trips to London? When I asked Ellen at the beginning of our relationship if there'd ever been anything between her and Harry, she'd assured me there hadn't been. But what if there had been, on Harry's part? He himself had said the appearance of the first Russian doll was all about timing, because I was going to marry Ellen. What if it had been him who had left it? And when neither Ellen nor I mentioned finding it, he had brought one to lunch with him, so that he could pretend he'd found it standing on the wall outside the house, hoping to provoke us into admitting that we'd found one too. I remember the look on his face when Ellen had showed him she now had a full set. Had that been a look of relief? That the seed he'd wanted to sow, that Layla had returned, had already taken root? There'd been no need for him to show us the Russian doll he had in his pocket, until I told him I didn't believe that Layla was back. I hadn't confided in him about all the other dolls I'd found, as perhaps he was expecting me to, so he had shown me the Russian doll he'd supposedly found on the wall, hoping maybe to prompt me into telling him about the others. But I hadn't. What about the one I found on the plate in the jackdaw? How could he have put it there without Ruby or Ellen or me seeing him? Unless he asked someone to do it for him. Someone who worked in the pub. Ruby? Were Harry and Ruby in this together? My mind feels as if it's spiralling out of control. Wanting to put an end to it, I drag myself off the doorstep. Ellen comes out of the kitchen, worry furrowing her brow. Are you all right? She asks. Fine. I head for the stairs. I'll be right as rain after a shower and a sleep. If you need anything, call me. But all I need are answers, and she can't give me those. With so much going round in my mind, I dread not being able to sleep. But I fall asleep quickly, and when I wake up the next morning, I wonder where the turmoil of the evening before had come from. How can Harry be behind the emails? They're so obviously from Layla, as are the photos I received. There's no way that Harry could have got his hands on them, or known that Layla and I referred to the tree stump on Pharos Hill as a Russian doll. It's strange what he said, though, about never believing that Layla was dead, or that she'd been kidnapped, that he'd always thought she'd turn up one day. He'd never told me that, although he may not have wanted to get my hopes up. I give my head an angry shake, hating that other theories, even more terrible than those that had broken me last night, have begun to crowd my brain, jostling for attention. What if Layla had turned to Harry after she disappeared from the picnic area in Fonche? Is that why he never believed she was dead? Because he knew that she wasn't? Is it possible that he gave her shelter? Helped her to hide? But why would he have done that? He didn't even like Layla. Unless his dislike of her had been a smokescreen. Maybe he'd been in love with her all along. Maybe he was the guy she'd slept with in London that weekend. I shake my head, appalled at myself. First, I think Harry's in love with Ellen. Now with Layla? I turn and look at Ellen, asleep beside me. One arm behind her head on the pillow, the other lying across her chest. Not so very long ago, I would have gently lifted her arm out of the way and gathered her to me. I would have started kissing her while she was still half asleep. But that was before Layla. The guilt I feel drives me out of bed and down the stairs to the kitchen. The post is lying on the mat, and as I stoop to pick it up, I see a brown envelope with the same white sticker on the front, except that this time it's addressed to me, not Ellen. I don't have to open it to know that it contains a Russian doll. I take it through to the kitchen, slit it open with a knife, and shake the contents into the palm of my hand. As I thought, it's a Russian doll. Except that this one has had its head smashed in.
39. Layla. I knew Finn wouldn't understand the get rid of Ellen message, at least not fully. Since receiving it, he'll have been trying to think of ways to tell Ellen it was over between them. He'd be wishing he'd never asked her to marry him in the first place. He'll have opened his mouth 100 times, ready to say the words that would bring me back. Yet he would never say them. Not because he lacked the courage, but because he was too kind to break Ellen's heart. Which sort of annoyed me, because he hadn't been too worried about breaking my heart all those years ago. I put aside my annoyance because it wasn't important. What was important was that Finn understood what I meant. It still surprises me that I want to hurt Finn so much when I love him so much. But there's something in me that needs him broken so that I can put him together again just as I want. My disappearance all those years ago hadn't broken him, not really. His descent into hell had been self-indulgent. Financially stable and without dependents, he could allow himself to wallow in depression. If he'd had to work for a living or had a child or children, he would have given himself the proverbial kick up the backside. He would have had to, just as I'd had to, in order to survive. It's why I'm not letting him off lightly. He must have reached the point where he's beginning to doubt everything he thought was true and everyone he thought he could trust. Which is exactly what I want.
40. Finn. The doll with the smashed head sends my mind to places it's never been before. I should have thrown it straight in the bin, but afraid that Ellen might find it, I took it out to my office and put it at the back of my drawer with the others. But its image has burned itself into my brain, taunting me. What is my purpose? It asks. Why have I been sent to you? What does my smashed head signify? Who do I represent? The only answers I come up with are dark and terrifying. The doll represents Ellen, and whoever sent it, because I've gone back to thinking that they might not be from Layla, wishes her harm. Not only that, they are expecting me to do it. The get rid of her message has taken on a whole new meaning. Harry or Ruby? Yes, because since Ellen mentioned her, Ruby has crept back onto my list of possible suspects. Both know I'm capable of violence. Are they using that violence against me? Are they trying to provoke me? Because sometimes, when Ellen comes and puts her arms around me, when her head is against my shoulder, I find myself wondering what it would be like to move my hands slowly upwards until they reach her neck and squeeze the life out of her. Sometimes, when she's asleep next to me, I find myself wondering what it would be like to place my pillow over her face and gently press the life out of her. Sometimes, when we walk along a path with a sheer drop only a few feet away from us, I find myself wondering what it would be like to push her onto the ground below, crushing the life out of her. I can no longer sleep the untroubled sleep of the innocent. Just as I used to have nightmares about having killed Layla, I now have nightmares about killing Ellen. She hasn't mentioned me phoning Tony again. Since my meltdown, she's been giving me space, worried, perhaps, that it will happen again. I enjoy the reprieve, but it doesn't last long. "You look so tired," she says one morning after another nightmarish night. She comes over and cups my face with her hands. "Maybe we could go away for a few days." "I'd been thinking the same thing," I tell her, because suddenly getting away seems like the best idea in the world. She searches my face. "But first, we need to decide what to do about Layla. You said you'd phone Tony." "I will," I tell her. "If you don't, I'll phone him." There's an edge to her voice that I haven't heard before. "It's making you ill, Finn." "I'm tired, that's all," I say irritably. "Anyway, I thought you had doubts about the dolls being from Layla." "I know I said that it could be Ruby, but only because I wanted you to be aware that it was possible," she says. "Ruby is what she is, but she's not malicious." She gives a short laugh. "I just wish I knew what Layla wanted." Unbidden, the image of the doll with the smashed head comes to mind, and I tighten my arms round her. "It would be so easy," a voice whispers. "All you have to do is move one hand to the back of her head and press it into your chest so that her nose and mouth are covered, and slowly tighten your other arm around her. At one point, when she realizes that she can't breathe, she'll struggle, but not for long. Your height and weight will ensure that it is over quickly. Then, when the police ask, you'll lie to them as you lied to them before and tell them that she suddenly collapsed, that she must have had a heart attack." "Finn, I can't breathe." Ellen twists her head to the side, freeing it from my grip. She takes a gulp of air, a laugh in her voice. "I know you love me, but you don't have to hold me so tightly." Shocked, I drop my arms, take a step back. A sweat breaks out on my brow. Sorry, I mutter, raking a hand through my hair.
Will you have a think about where we can go for a few days? She says.
I stare at her. Had I really been about to smother her? Yes, of course, I'll go and look for something now. I go out to my office, my heart pounding. Get a grip, I tell myself. Ellen wasn't in danger. You weren't going to do anything. But there's a darkness in my mind that won't go away. The next day, 5 days after I received the doll with a smashed head, the office door opens. Expecting it to be Ellen, I fix a smile on my face. But it's Harry. And my smile fades as fast as it came.
Hey, don't look at me like that,
he reproaches, and I realized he must have seen the mistrust in my eyes.
Ellen asked me to come.
I can't bring myself to get to my feet and hug him, as I usually do.
Why?
I ask.
Because she's worried about you.
He looks around for something to sit on and pulls out the stool I keep under my desk.
What's up, buddy?
I have to find out. I have to know if he's behind the dolls and the emails. I can't stand not knowing who I can trust.
Are you in love with Ellen?
I say, trying not to sound accusatory. His eyes widen in surprise, and he opens his mouth, about to say something, and I find myself hoping that he's going to tell me he is. Because then, if Ellen loved him back, it would leave me free for Layla. But he closes his mouth and swallows hard. And because I know him well, I know he's just bitten back an angry retort.
No, Finn,
he says, looking back at me steadily, realizing how important his answer is to me.
Lovely though she is, I am not in love with Ellen, nor have I ever been.
He gives a short laugh. You must have realized by now that we don't have the same taste in women. All those girlfriends you had in London, they weren't your type.
Think about it, Finn. They were all carbon copies of mine because you thought they were the sort of girls you should be going out with. But you were never very interested in them. Then you met Layla, as different from those girls as chalk is from cheese. And as you realised quite early on, I couldn't see what you saw in her.
He pauses a moment. And I wonder what he would say if I told him that only a few days ago I'd questioned if he was the man Layla had slept with in London.
But here's the thing, he goes on. I've never experienced true love. I'm not sure it even exists, but if it does, it was what you and Layla had.
I wait, giving him time to add, and what you and Ellen have. But he doesn't. The silence stretches out between us. He's waiting for me to say something. And when I don't, he takes pity on me.
Why did you think I was in love with Ellen?
I can't tell him that in a moment of madness, I suspected he was sending me emails and planting Russian dolls, pretending to be Layla so that I wouldn't marry Ellen. Someone's messing with my head, I say instead.
Layla?
Maybe. Ellen told me she got a Russian doll in the post, and that even though it would seem to confirm that Layla is back, you're reluctant to go to the police.
We agreed to give her a few days.
I decide to open up to him. I found a couple of dolls that I haven't told Ellen about.
Right.
He nods thoughtfully.
Where did you find them?
One was outside the house, one on the car in Cheltenham. I don't mention the others, because the list is getting too long. The latest one came through the post. It was postmarked Cheltenham. Its head was smashed in, I add.
They're not very careful at the post office, he says. Probably the franking machine.
It never occurred to me that it could be anything but deliberate. Have I been sending myself to hell and back for nothing?
I wondered if it was on purpose.
He frowns.
What, you think there was some kind of message behind it? A threat or something? I don't know.
Boy, Layla must be really angry that you're with Ellen.
So you think the dolls are definitely from Layla?
Who else could they be from?
But she must be seriously disturbed. I mean, to go as far as wishing you actual harm. That's kind of worrying. For a wonderful moment, I feel better. The doll with the smashed head represents me, not Ellen. But then I remember the get rid of her message, and my fears come creeping back.
You need to tell the police, Harry goes on. It's killing you. You look dreadful. So does Ellen. She's worried about you, Finn.
He pauses.
And she's worried about what will happen when Layla turns up. I've told her it won't change anything, I say roughly, annoyed with Ellen for not only doubting me, but for telling Harry that she does. Well, maybe the way you are at the moment isn't filling her with confidence.
I shift uneasily on my chair. Has she somehow sensed the dark thoughts I've had about killing her? I run my hands through my hair, haunted by the nightmares I've been having. Harry claps me on the back. Come on, let's go and see Ruby. Ellen encourages us to go to the Jackdaw on our own, but Harry persuades her to come with us. Ruby is delighted to see Harry, and we arrange to have a late lunch once the rush is over so that she can join us. The four of us sit with a couple of bottles of wine, laughing and talking, and I feel better than I have for a long time. I catch Ellen throwing me anxious glances, and understanding that she's worried I'm annoyed with her for inviting Harry down to talk to me, I reach for her hand across the table. Harry notices, and when it's time to leave, he says he wants to stay and talk to Ruby for a bit, giving me and Ellen a chance to be on our own.
You didn't mind me inviting Harry? Ellen asks as we stroll back to the house. No, it was good to talk to him. He made me see things more clearly.
And at least I can eliminate him from my list of suspects, I think silently. Which only leaves Ruby and Layla, and I'm pretty sure that Ruby isn't involved. The relief I feel, that it must be Layla, tells me that the darkness I've felt over the past few days wasn't only about not knowing who I could trust, but from the fear she hadn't come back after all.
So will you phone Tony?
Yes, I say, realising that was her aim in getting Harry down. I'll give him a ring on Monday. Harry doesn't stay long when he comes back to the house because he has a dinner in London. After he's left, I spend a bit of time in my office. I still haven't received an email from Layla. Is she seriously waiting for me to harm Ellen? To kill her? I slide open my drawer and reach inside, searching for the Russian dolls. I run my fingers over them, drawing a strange comfort from the feel of them. It's almost as if they're telling me not to lose faith, that everything will work out in the end. Then my fingers fall on the one with the smashed head, and I withdraw my hand quickly, my heart pounding.
It's strange that Ellen never asked me for the one she saw me with in the Jackdaw, has never asked if she can add it to her set of Russian dolls. She's added the one she received through the post to her set. It stands next to the one she found on the wall, two twin sisters staring blank-eyed at me from the worktop.
By the time night falls, I can't bear the silence any longer. I encourage Ellen to go up to bed and take out my mobile. When can we meet? I ask. I don't really expect her to reply, because she didn't to the last ones I sent her asking the same thing. But this time, a reply comes straight back. Did you get the doll? When can we meet? I ask again, ignoring her. Did you get the doll?
Yes, I reply, because there's no point in going around in circles. When can we meet?
When you've done what you have to do.
What do you mean? I ask, remembering Harry's theory that the doll got damaged in the post.
You've seen the doll. A wave of fury takes hold of me.
It's not going to happen. Never. Goodbye, Layla.
I throw my phone down on the sofa as if it's become toxic. Somewhere along the way, Layla has lost her mind. What she's suggesting, what she wants me to do, is madness. I wait a while, then go quietly upstairs, hoping Ellen will be asleep. She's in her usual sleep mode, one arm behind her head on the pillow. Beautiful. Desirable. Go on, a voice taunts. Get in beside her. Prove that you love her more than Layla. After all, you've just chosen her over Layla. She stirs, half opens her eyes, holds out her arms to me, smiling sleepily. I'm going for a shower. I speak in a whisper, an encouragement to her to go back to sleep. Disappointment shadows her face and she drops her arms. In the shower, I try to wash some of my shame away. But when I get out, its stain is still there, making it impossible for me to get into bed beside Ellen. I wander the house restlessly. My body aches with fatigue. I've barely slept in 3 days. In the sitting room, I lie down on the sofa, hoping sleep will take me. Something digs me in the back, and I realize it's my mobile from when I threw it down. I don't want to check my emails. I don't want to find one from Layla. I'm not ready for another of her ultimatums. But maybe it will be the message you've been waiting for, says the voice. The one that will give you a time and a place. The one that will tell you the Russian doll with the smashed head was a joke. So I check my emails and find one from Layla. You have 10 days.
41. Layla. There was something about smashing the little doll's head that was strangely satisfying. My own head felt better after, and I wondered if maybe I'd smashed the voice out of it, the one that kept dragging me back to the past, taunting me with visions of how things could have been. But I'd only quietened it, because after a few days of relative calm, it came back, driving me on, propelling me forward to an end I didn't yet know. Finn's reaction to the Russian doll was predictable. Disbelief, anger, blunt refusal. I almost laughed at his last message, at the implication that he had any choice in the matter, as if his goodbye, Layla, actually meant something, actually meant that he was never going to contact me again or read any more emails from me. Didn't he realise that he was dancing to my tune and still had a lot of steps to learn? I couldn't keep him dancing forever, though. The strain of keeping it together was beginning to tell on me. The voice began to intrude more and more, and the effort of blocking it out made my head tired. I needed to impose a deadline. I couldn't let Finn prevaricate indefinitely. It wasn't good for him. And it certainly wasn't good for me.
42. Finn. Reading Layla's message, I prepare myself mentally for 10 days of silence. I doubt she'll be emailing me, unless I tell her what she wants to hear. And as I won't ever be able to, I won't be emailing her. At first, all I feel is panic. How am I going to last 10 days without some sort of contact with her, when a day without news is already difficult? But then worry sets in at what might happen once the 10 days are up. Surely Ellen won't be in danger from Layla. But what if she is? I feel torn between my desire for Layla and my desire to protect Ellen. Now, more than ever, I need to tell Tony. But I feel stuck in an impasse, unable to move. Maybe a 10-day silence will be a good thing. I'll have time to clear my head, devote myself to Ellen, work out a strategy. We'll go away for a few days, and I might even begin to forget about Layla. I go up to bed, and when the sun wakes me early the next morning, I feel calmer than I've felt for ages. With the prospect of 10 days respite from Layla's increasingly erratic demands, I feel almost optimistic. I look at Ellen asleep beside me, and feel a twinge of guilt at the way I turned my back on her last night. I wish I could make it up to her, take her in my arms, show her that I love her. But I can't. And the thought that she might wake up and expect me to propels me out of bed. I dress quietly and go downstairs. Shall we go for a walk? I ask Peggy, giving her a morning cuddle. It's one of those beautiful, still Sunday mornings when everyone is in bed and the only sound comes from the birds chirruping in the trees and the chickens clucking in the garden of a nearby house. I glance across at Mick's house and him standing at the window. I raise my hand in acknowledgement, and when he waves back, I feel guilty that I haven't made more of an effort to get to know him. As I walk along the river, I think about where Ellen and I could go. I've never lost my desire to visit Lewis, but when I suggested it to Ellen last year, she said it was the last place she wanted to go. I can understand why. It's where she lost her mother, where she lost her father, even if that wasn't such a great loss. It's also where she saw Layla for the last time. Anyway, it's too far. Perhaps we should just stay here. Simon's Bridge is so beautiful at this time of the year. Why sit in a car for hours, only to end up somewhere equivalent? My sudden reluctance to go away niggles at me, urging me to be honest with myself instead of hiding behind a long car journey. The truth is shameful. In a hotel, I won't be able to wait until Ellen is asleep before joining her in bed. My mood plummets. I call Peggy from the river, hating the person I've become, the person Layla has made me become. The village shop opens at 8 on a Sunday, so I buy bacon and eggs along with the papers before heading home. As I approach the house, I'm struck by a terrible sense of déjà vu. Because there, standing on the wall, is a little Russian doll. I cover the last few yards in a couple of seconds and snatch it up, my heart hammering painfully. I put it quickly in my pocket and look up and down the road. There's no one around. Remembering how I saw Mick standing at his window, I go over and knock on his front door, forgetting that it's only 8:15 in the morning. He takes a while opening it. "Sorry," he says. There's a bowl of porridge in his hand. "I'm in the middle of giving my wife her breakfast." "No, no, I'm sorry," I say, taking in his dishevelled appearance. "I'll come back later. I just wanted to ask you something." I wait for him to ask me what it is I want to know, but he's already shutting the door. "Sorry," he says again, "I have to go." He raises the bowl of porridge, reminding me of his task in hand. "Come back in about an hour. I should have finished by then." I cross back over the road, looking up and down the road again, knowing that I'm not going to see Layla, because she'll be long gone by now. Gone where? Back to Cheltenham? My ears pick out the sound of a car engine turning over, then the sound of it driving off. It sounded as if the driver was in a hurry. Was it Layla? She hadn't yet learned to drive when I knew her, but 12 years is enough time for that to have changed. In the hall, I hear the sound of the shower running, which means I have a few minutes before Ellen comes down. I take the shopping through to the kitchen, intending to make a start on breakfast. But I feel too agitated, so I go out to the garden, hoping its tranquility will work its magic on me. A window opens upstairs, and looking up, I see Ellen smiling down at me. "Did you go for bread, or have you been in your office?" she asks, and I want to yell at her to leave me alone. "Bread," I say. "I got some bacon and eggs too," I add, making an effort. "Not for me, thanks," she says. "I'll have muesli." Words rush into my mouth. "Why can't you be more like Layla?" And I bite them back quickly. Over breakfast, I feel her eyes on me as I work my way through my bacon and egg sandwich. "Finn," she says after a moment. "What?" "Please phone Tony. It's Sunday. He won't mind." I know she's right. Besides, Layla has gone too far now with the doll with the smashed head. At least the one I found on the wall was intact. "All right. I'll phone him after breakfast." I don't particularly want to phone Tony in front of her, but she'll think it strange if I disappear into my office to do it, and I don't want her to think I have anything to hide, even though I do. Which is why I draw the line at putting Tony on loudspeaker, as Ellen perhaps expects. But the risk of him mentioning that Thomas saw Layla standing outside the cottage is too great. "I'm afraid this isn't just a social call," I say,
once we've established that we're both fine. "Go on," he says. And I suddenly realise that Ellen doesn't know I told Tony that she thought she saw Layla in Cheltenham. "It's about Layla," I begin. "A couple of things have happened that have made Ellen and I wonder if she might still be alive." "Has something else happened?" he asks. "Some weeks ago, Ellen found a little Russian doll on the wall outside the house. Then a few days later, she thought she saw her in Cheltenham," I add for Ellen's benefit. "Yes, you told me about that. But what has a Russian doll got to do with it?" "When they were young, Ellen and Layla had a set each of Russian dolls, and one of the dolls went missing. Since the one that Ellen found, another has turned up. Two, in fact," I meant quickly, remembering the one Ellen saw me with in the Jackdaw. "Ellen received one in the post, and we found the other one in the local pub, along with our bill. The thing is, they, Russian dolls, have a significance for both Ellen and Layla, a significance nobody else knows about." And I go on to explain the story from their childhood. "And nobody else knows the story?" he asks when I've finished. "Only Harry. Ellen told him." "And you're sure you didn't mention it to anyone else? Someone who would want to get back at you? An ex-girlfriend, maybe?" "No," I say firmly. "I've never told anyone." "Hmm. The one that came through the post, do you know where it was sent from?" "Cheltenham, which is where Ellen thought she saw her." "That lends a lot more weight to Thomas's assertion that he saw her outside the cottage," he says. There's a silence while he mulls it over. "Leave it with me, Finn. I'll have a think, speak to a few people and get back to you. Thanks, Tony. I appreciate it." I hang up and turn to Ellen. "He'll get back to us." "But does he think that Layla has come back, that she's alive?" "I think he thinks it's worth looking into." She gives a small smile. "It seems a lot more real now that we've told somebody official. I began to wonder if we were mad to think that Layla had come back. What I don't understand is why she's hiding. I can't stop wondering what she actually wants." "We'll have to wait and see." I get to my feet. "I need to do a couple of things. See you for lunch." In the office, I think about phoning Tony back and telling him about all the other dolls I've found, including the one with the smashed head. But if I'm going to go that far, I'll have to tell him about the emails, as there's no point him only having half the story. In the end, I decide to wait until he phones me back. If he says that what they've got to go on isn't enough to spend time looking for Layla, then I'll tell him the rest. It's a long morning. I take a look at the markets, but I need to be in a good place to trade, and today isn't one of those days. I look for something to distract me, and remember that I'm meant to be going to see Mick. "Just pop in to see Mick," I tell Ellen. "See if he wants to come over for a drink." "That's nice of you," Ellen says approvingly. He doesn't take as long answering the door this time, and I'm relieved to see that his hands are free. "Sorry about this morning," I begin. "I didn't realise it was quite so early. I was just wondering if you saw anybody hanging round outside the house this morning, you know, when you were standing at the window." He shakes his head. "Can't say I did, but I wasn't there long. I'd just opened the curtains when I saw you, and then Fiona called me. A couple walked past, but they didn't stop." "Past your house or mine?" I ask. "Yours." "I don't suppose you saw them leave something on the wall, did you?" "Not to my knowledge. Unless they came back once I'd gone. You could always ask Mrs. Jeffries, although she tends to sit in her conservatory out the back." I nod. "Well, thanks, Mick. How's your wife doing?" He shrugs. "No change." "Well, if you ever feel like having a drink, just pop over. We're usually in." "Thanks." He gives a rueful smile. "You never know. I might take you up on your offer one day." As I cross back over the road, I think about the couple who walked past our house, wondering why I had dismissed them without a second thought. I should at least have asked Mick if the girl, woman, I remind myself, had red hair. But I don't want to believe that Layla has someone in her life. If she did, why would she be playing these games? The rest of the day passes unbelievably slowly. Then, just before I go to bed,
I check my emails and see that one has come in from Layla. I think about not opening it, but as always, curiosity gets the better of me. There's just one word. 10.
43. Layla. The day I gave Finn his 10-day ultimatum, I picked up my next consignment of Russian dolls from the post office in Cheltenham. As I carefully unwrapped each of the 10 dolls, a pleasing image came to mind. 10 little Russian dolls lined up on the wall. It reminded me of the song Ellen and I used to sing when we were young, about 10 green bottles hanging on a wall, and how if one green bottle should accidentally fall, there'd be 9 green bottles hanging on a wall. I felt a surge of excitement. What if I did a countdown? The more I thought about it, the more I liked the idea. The voice liked it even more.
44. Finn. We're almost into August, so business is slow. I spend the morning on the phone to Harry, talking about investments, looking at what our competitors are doing, which funds are working and which ones aren't. Later, feeling hungry, I wander back to the house, and as I go into the kitchen, I see a note on the table. I've gone to do some shopping. If you'd like to join me for lunch, give me a call. Kiss, kiss. I glance at the clock on the oven and see that it's already 2:30, which means Ellen must have left sometime in the morning. I don't know when the last time was that I actually came out of my office to have lunch with Ellen. The days of meeting in the kitchen at 1 o'clock have long gone. Ellen used to come and fetch me, but she doesn't anymore, and it bothers me less than it should. At first, I thought the email Layla sent last Sunday saying 10, coupled with the Russian doll she left on the wall, was her way of reminding me that I had 10 days to do whatever it was she was expecting me to do, even though I'd told her that it would never happen. But the next morning, when I went downstairs to give Peggy her breakfast, I found another brown envelope lying on the mat, along with the rest of the mail. Realising what it was, I stooped to pick it up. Like the last one, it was addressed to me. I could hear Ellen moving about upstairs, so I stuffed the envelope under my shirt and went through to the kitchen. I knew it contained a Russian doll, but I didn't know if it had its head smashed in like the last one I received. I didn't want to risk opening it where Ellen might see me. So, telling Peggy apologetically that I'd feed her in a minute, I went to my office, tore open the envelope quickly and shook the contents onto my desk. One Russian doll, its head mercifully intact. Breathing a sigh of relief, I pushed it quickly into the back of my drawer. It was only when I received an email that evening which said 9 that I realised I was caught up in a macabre countdown. The next day, Tuesday, there was another envelope in the post containing another doll, and another email in the evening. 8. Layla's subsequent emails on Wednesday evening, 7. On Thursday, 6. And again last night, 5. Only add to the sense of helplessness I feel at being unable to stop the wheels of fate from turning. Bizarrely, the overriding emotion I feel is shame. That at 41 years old and 6'4", a few little dolls can strike such terror in me. The pressure of the countdown is beginning to take its toll. Exhaustion has set in. I only go to bed when I'm dropping with tiredness, and I lie there, my mind going round in circles, wondering where it will end, how it will end, while Ellen sleeps the sleep of the dead next to me. Each morning I'm up early so that I can hide the latest Russian doll in the drawer in my office before she gets up. Tony got back to me the day after my phone call, the 9th day of the countdown, to say that he and a couple of officers, armed with the photo of Layla they'd used in the initial search, plus a computer-enhanced photo of what she might look like now, were going to make discreet inquiries at hotels, B&Bs and hostels in Cheltenham. I used this news to persuade Ellen that going away wouldn't be a good idea, even though a part of me was tempted to jet off somewhere exotic, just to get away from the relentlessness of the countdown. Only coming back once the 10 days were up. Imagine they find Layla and we're at the other end of the country, I said. and Ellen had agreed it would be better to stay in Simonsbridge. Sometimes I can't believe I'm still keeping things from her. But if I tell her about this latest series of Russian dolls, she'll urge me to tell Tony about them, and Tony, with this added proof that Layla is back, will double his efforts to close the net on her. And I don't want that. I don't want her arrested like a common criminal. What I want is to be able to see her first, to talk to her by myself. Which is why I sent her an email on Wednesday, warning her that she's currently the object of a search. I shouldn't have, I know. I only sent one line. The police are looking for you in Cheltenham. If I'm honest, it isn't just about not wanting her to be found until I have a chance to see her. Stupidly, I thought she might be so grateful for the tip-off that she would put aside her countdown and agree to see me. But she never replied. I look at Ellen's note again, wondering what I should do. She'll have had lunch by now, so there's no point in driving into Cheltenham just to come home again. The thought of her having a solitary lunch in a cafe makes me feel guilty all over again. When had I become so careless with Ellen's feelings? When had I stopped making an effort? If only I'd been honest with her 5 weeks ago, when I found the doll on the wall. If only I'd shared the dolls, the emails with her. If I truly loved her, I would have, I acknowledge. If I truly loved her, I wouldn't have let anything come between us. Now the distance between us seems huge. Her note is evidence of that. Normally she would just have come and told me that she was going shopping. Maybe I should phone her and suggest meeting for coffee. The sound of the car coming in the drive makes the decision for me. I go into the hall and open the front door. Sorry, I say, as she takes a couple of bags of shopping from the car. I've only just seen your note. It's fine, she says. But I know that it's not, by the way she pushes past me into the house, without letting me take the bags from her, as she usually would. I follow her into the kitchen. I'm sorry, I say again. Don't worry, I'm used to it, she says, dumping the bags on the side. Something in her voice, a slight bitterness, makes me look at her properly. Her face is drawn, unhappy. And when I think about it, I realize she's looked drawn and unhappy for a while. I can't remember the last time she laughed. I can't remember the last time I laughed. What do you mean? I ask. Having lunch on my own. I left you the same note on Tuesday, and it was still on the table when I got back. She stops unpacking the bags and looks at me, a bunch of bananas in her hand. You didn't even notice I'd gone. What's with the note anyway? I ask, getting angry. Why didn't you just tell me you were going out? Why should I always be the one to come and find you? You never leave your office anymore. You don't even bother to have lunch unless I fetch you. That's not true, I protest. The last 3 days I've had lunch here in the kitchen on my own. So, as I said, I'm used to it. Hating that I'm the cause of the hurt in her voice, I take the bananas from her and put my arms around her. If I tell you I'm sorry a third time, will you forgive me? I ask. It won't happen again, I promise. It's holiday time, so I'm not going to be so busy now, I add, knowing she'll think that the reason I've been staying in my office is because of my workload. I thought you were avoiding me. No, I say softly. And as she sinks her body into mine, I feel real hate for Layla, for coming between us, for upsetting the equilibrium of our relationship. Late in the evening, my usual email arrives. 4. A reminder that I have 4 days left to get rid of Ellen before... What? Layla takes matters into her own hands? What will she do? Turn up at the house and confront us? Or get rid of Ellen herself? I shake my head, knowing it's just exhaustion speaking. Layla would never harm Ellen. But my mind keeps going back to the doll with the smashed head and the "when you've done what you have to do" email. Given that 12 years have passed, I might not know Layla as well as I once did. Despite everything, I managed to sleep solidly for the first time in weeks, maybe because I've sorted things with Ellen. When I wake, I feel stronger, refreshed. I stretch out my arm and realize Ellen isn't beside me, that she must already be up, and I leap out of bed, hoping that she hasn't got to the post before me. As I'm throwing my clothes on, I realize that it's Sunday, which means there won't be any post. The relief I feel is short-lived. I can't imagine Layla letting me off for the day, especially when I remember that last Sunday she left me a Russian doll on the wall. I go down to the kitchen and find Ellen sitting at the table, a cup of coffee in front of her. "I'll go and get some fresh bread for breakfast," I say, planting a kiss on the top of her head. "I'll go with you," she offers. "No need, it's fine. Stay and finish your coffee." "I have. Anyway, I could do with a walk." She reaches under the table. "Come on, Peggy." There's nothing I can do except grab the Russian doll, if there is one, off the wall before she sees it. But as we walk down the path, there's no sign of a doll, and I don't know if I should be grateful or worried. Maybe Layla has left it somewhere else this morning, in which case I'm going to have to hunt for it surreptitiously when we get back. We buy the bread and walk back to the house hand in hand. As we approach the house, Ellen stops suddenly, dragging me to a standstill, and my senses immediately go on alert. "Oh my God," she says, pointing towards the house, and she sounds so incredulous that for a moment I think Layla has turned up. "Look, Finn, on the wall!" "Oh my God," I echo, glad it's only a doll, not Layla, because I'm not ready to see her. Not now, not like this. I'm about to say something more, but Ellen is already running, past the house, down the road, all the way to the corner. Ignoring the doll, I run after her, wondering what she's seen, wondering if she saw Layla. I catch up with her in the next road. "Did you see anything?" I ask. She shakes her head, out of breath. "We must have just missed her." She looks up at me, the all too familiar fear and excitement on her face. "She was here, Finn. Layla was here. She left a doll on the wall." Her eyes fill with sudden tears. "We might have seen her if we'd walked back a little faster." "She doesn't want us to see her," I say gently, putting my arms around her. "Why hasn't Tony found her?" she says, her voice wobbling, angry now. "How much longer are we going to have to wait?" "I don't know," I soothe. "Can you phone Tony? Ask him if they found anything. She must be in Cheltenham. She has to be. If there was any news, he'd have told us. And I don't want to phone him again on a Sunday. I'll phone him tomorrow, all right?" She nods mutely, and I curse Layla for leaving the doll on the wall. Where the hell is she anyway? I'm not so sure she is in Cheltenham. Just because Ellen saw her there and the envelopes have a Cheltenham postmark, it doesn't mean she's living there. She could have dropped them into a postbox in any of the outlying villages, and they would automatically go to the main post office at Cheltenham to be sorted. "Can we go to Cheltenham?" Ellen asks. "We were only gone about half an hour. She can't be that far ahead." "We don't know that she's in Cheltenham," I say. "She is," Ellen says fiercely. "I know it. I really don't think... I don't mind going on my own. I'll get the car keys." She heads towards the house, taking the Russian doll from the wall as she passes. So we go to Cheltenham on what I know is a wild goose chase, because we're not going to find Layla sitting in a cafe or walking along the road any more than I would have if I'd stopped on the way back from St. Mary's that time. We traipse the streets anyway, and when Ellen eventually concedes defeat, we stop for lunch. It's not a huge success. Neither of us is in a talkative mood, so we sit largely in silence, each of us lost in our own thoughts. We get home, and Ellen disappears into her study for the rest of the afternoon. In the evening, we watch a film which neither of us really follows. After Ellen has gone up to bed, I sit down at the kitchen table and check my phone for emails. There's one from Layla. I already know what it will say. 3. I don't usually write back, but after the near miss this morning, I do. "Where are you?" A reply comes straight back, and I can't believe that at last she's actually going to tell me. I take a breath and open it.
Closer than you think.
45. Layla. I wanted to stop the countdown. I was so sure I'd been caught when I left the first of the 10 dolls on the wall last week. But the voice reassured me. "You can post the others," it said. "You don't have to take any more risks." Except that yesterday I had to leave another on the wall because it was Sunday again. Last week I ordered more Russian dolls. The voice told me to. I ordered 20 this time. They were delivered the next day and it gave me a real rush to open the box and see them lying there, waiting for me to perform caesarean after caesarean after caesarean and release all the little babies. I don't know what the voice has planned for this newest lot. It's getting harder for me to ignore it, to shut it out. Maybe it thinks that I'm going to have to extend the countdown. But I have faith in Finn, in his love for me. He will get rid of Ellen. There are only 2 days left. If I could, I'd end it all now. It's why I replied to Finn's email asking where I was. "Don't tell him," the voice said. "Don't tell him where you are." I couldn't defy the voice, but I gave Finn a clue, hoping he would understand and bring me back before it's too late.
46. Finn. I start awake, my heart pounding, my body sleek with sweat. Disorientated, I look around me and find I'm lying on the sofa in the sitting room. It was a nightmare, I tell myself, that's all. If I go upstairs, Ellen will be safe and sound in bed, not lying crumpled at the bottom of a cliff, her body bloodied and broken. It was only a dream. It had been so vivid, though. I was standing close to a cliff-top edge with Ellen, while Layla urged me to push her onto the rocks below. I couldn't see Layla. There was only her voice. But I understood the choice I had to make. If I wanted to see Layla, I had to kill Ellen. Otherwise, Layla would disappear again, this time forever. And Ellen, sensing what I was about to do, grabbed hold of me, dragging me off the cliff with her. And as we hurtled to the ground below, my voice was one long scream of, "Layla!" Had I screamed her name out loud? Is that what woke me? I wait for the drumming in my ears to stop and establish that the house is silent, that if I had been calling out in my sleep, it hadn't woken Ellen. Dawn is filtering its way through the night sky, and I get groggily to my feet, feeling more exhausted than before I fell asleep. Coffee. I need coffee. The closer than you think message has been going round and round in my head like a stuck recording. Because of the message I sent her, warning her that the police were looking for her, Layla knows I think she's in Cheltenham. So if she's closer than Cheltenham, she could be in any of the nearby villages. Or even in Simon's Bridge itself. It would explain how she's been able to leave the dolls so easily. I told Ellen that I'd spoken to Tony, as she had asked me to do, and that he'd said they hadn't found Layla yet, but that they were still looking. None of it was true, but it put her mind at rest. It's almost over anyway. Yesterday, I got another doll in the post, and the subsequent email, 2. Today, I'll get the last Russian doll, and tomorrow? Well, tomorrow, I have no idea. Only that my time has run out. Ellen is still here. I haven't got rid of her, as Layla asked me to do. So what next? Is she going to carry on with her game? Extend the countdown? God, I hope not. But what if it becomes something worse? What if she hasn't been bluffing? It's frightening to think I have no idea what Layla is capable of doing. I hear Ellen's footsteps on the stairs and realize with a start that I haven't checked if the envelope has arrived. I get to my feet, then sit back down again. It's the last one, so it hardly matters if Ellen gets to it before I do. The mail only arrives as we're having breakfast. I go out to the hall,
but Ellen follows me. "Anything for me?" she asks. "I don't know, I haven't looked yet." I wait for her to walk back to the kitchen ahead of me so that I can stuff the envelope under my shirt, but she reaches round and takes the post from my hands. "It's just that I'm waiting for my new contract," she explains, rifling through it. "Kathy put it in the post 2 days ago." She picks out the brown envelope. "This must be it." She turns it over. "Oh, it's for you." A sudden frown creases her brow. "It looks like the one I received a couple of weeks ago. Do you think..." Her voice trails away. "Let's open it and see," I say, because there's no use pretending I don't know what she's thinking. "Maybe there'll be a letter or something." "I think it's another doll," she says, feeling the envelope with her fingers. She hands it to me, and because there's nothing else I can do, I carry it through to the kitchen and open it. I shake it onto the worktop, not thinking for one second that it will have its head smashed in. But it does. Ellen looks at it in dismay. "What a shame." She picks it up. "Poor little doll. I feel like complaining to the post office. They must have dropped a box on it or something. Where was it posted?" I look at the postmark. "Cheltenham, the same as yours." "Is there a letter?" "No, nothing." "How strange." We carry on with our breakfast, but Ellen's eyes flit constantly to the broken Russian doll lying on the worktop, and I can almost see her mind whirring with theories and suppositions. "You don't think..." she begins. Her voice trails away. "What?" I prompt. "That the doll was damaged on purpose." "What do you mean?" "Well, that Layla damaged it on purpose, you know, as a kind of message."
"A message?"
"It's just that this one was sent to you, not me."
"You mean Layla wishes me harm?"
"It's just a theory," she says hastily. "It's just that if this is about you marrying me, it kind of makes sense." "Let's hope Tony finds her quickly then," I say, attempting a smile. "If it is Layla," she says.
"You've changed your mind again."
"I don't know," she says helplessly. "But if it isn't Layla, I'm going to be really mad with whoever it is for getting our hopes up." She thinks for a moment. "Can we go to the Jackdaw for lunch?" I look at her curiously.
"If you like."
"It's just that the more I think about it, the more I can't believe that Layla would do this kind of thing. You know, come right up to the house and leave a doll on the wall without coming in to see us. I know Layla. It's not in her nature to be cruel. And sending these Russian dolls is cruel, especially when they have a smashed head. So if it is someone else, the most likely candidate is Ruby, hoping to break us up. Remember that partner of missing woman moves sister in article? She must have been behind it."
"What if she's right?" I think feverishly. "What if it really is some kind of hideous joke and Layla hasn't come back?" I catch myself. When did I become this man? Doubting myself, doubting my mind. The man who pulled off the Grant James deal 6 weeks ago feels like someone I can't remember being.
"You do still want to marry me, don't you?"
Ellen goes on. I feel suddenly furious. "You asked me that before and I told you that I did."
"That was weeks ago."
"So, nothing has changed."
"Everything has changed."
I push my chair back abruptly. "Let's go out for lunch then." I get to my feet, throw my bowl in the sink. "I'm taking Peggy for a walk." I'm not proud of walking away. I know Ellen wanted more from me, wanted some sort of reassurance. But I can't give her what she wants, not at the moment. I go down to the river, wishing Ellen hadn't brought Ruby back into the equation, wondering what I'll do if it does turn out to be her. I rub the corners of my eyes, wishing I wasn't so damn tired, wondering why I'm doubting Ruby all over again. If there's one thing I'm sure of, it's that all this, Layla, has nothing to do with Ruby. I know very well that Layla is back. What I need to be asking is, why am I letting her do this to me instead of taking control? When did I become so passive? The need to do something physical is overwhelming.
If I could numb my mind for just a moment, rid it of all confusion, I'd feel better. If I hadn't brought Peggy with me, I could have gone for a run. The cool water of the river, the early morning sunshine playing on its surface, pulls me towards it. Pulling my sweatshirt over my head, I strip down to my boxers and plunge into the river. The shock of the deceptively freezing water invigorates me and fills me with renewed energy. I power up and down the river, scattering ducks, focusing only on one thing, emptying my brain. Later, on the way down to the Jackdaw, Ellen links her arm through mine, determined to show Ruby our united front. The intention irritates me, and I feel almost vindicated when we arrive, because there's no sign of Ruby behind the bar. And when we ask, we learn she's been away for the last week and that she isn't due back until the weekend. I've never known Ruby to go away for any length of time. Just an occasional day off to visit her mum, but never, I make a quick calculation, around 10 days. 10. I close my mind to the implications. Where has she gone? When I ask, nobody seems to know. The general feeling is that she's gone to her mum's in Cheltenham. Or is she closer than I think?
Well, that's that then, says Ellen despondently. We're no nearer finding the truth.
That evening, the final email comes in. 1.
This ends CD 5.